Hello, and welcome to Awkward Men Asking Awkward Questions. I am one of your hosts, Ian Page.
And I'm the other one, Stephen Lieb, and I am digesting a burrito right now.
That is more than we needed to know, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
So, hello everyone. Thank you for listening to our very first podcast. We're hoping that you enjoy it.
We appreciate your listening ear.
Yeah. So a quick explanation of what this podcast is. The kind of idea behind it is to ask awkward questions to each other and to our guests about life, love, religion, and any other random topic that may or may not come up. And our guests will include friends of ours and people in our majors, professors.
Possibly branching out into some of the more obscure parts of East Lansing.
Yeah, whatever we can do. Yeah, this is an East Lansing-based podcast. East Lansing, Michigan, if we happen to have any international listeners, which I doubt we will.
Well, we might.
We might.
Within East Lansing.
We are in East Lansing. That is true. So, yeah, it'll be hopefully a fun little ride, and maybe you'll learn something. The more you know.
The more you know.
The more you know.
There's a rainbow.
There's a rainbow going across it. Doing physical gestures on a podcast is always a real winner.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's introduce a little bit about each other. My name's Ian Page, like I mentioned. This is my, third or fourth podcast I've ever started. Hopefully this one will go farther and do better than the other ones. You may know me from Two Tons of Talk that I did with our friends Nicholas Dressel and Eric Eilerson, hopefully future guests on this podcast. I am an actor and writer here in East Lansing, based in Detroit. Yeah, that's all you really need to know about me for right now. What about you, Steve?
My name is Stephen Lieb. Like I said earlier, I also go to school here. This is my first podcast that I'm co-hosting. I've been on one other, the Nobody's podcast. That was an interesting experience. I'm a philosophy major, music minor, an aspiring composer.
You know, you don't need to point to the microphone when you say that.
Somebody's got to be there for me to talk to. Otherwise, I'm just going to be uncomfortable and awkward. Well, okay, that works.
Yeah, that is the name of the game.
Wow, I feel so legitimate with this podcast right
You're
now.
You're doing exactly what we told everyone we were going to do. Awkward men asking awkward questions, even to each other. Yeah, I'm just going to turn up the mic a little bit. Anyway, so that's a little bit about us. If you have any further questions, don't ask them right now. Eventually we'll get to how you can ask us questions and that sort of thing. But for now, let us introduce our very, very first guest, possibly the most important guest we'll ever have, because he is our first guest.
Mm-hmm. He's number one.
He came from very far to come and visit us. And by very far, I mean he came from the room next to us.
Mm-hmm. Not even across the hall.
Not even across the hall. Literally in the same apartment we are currently in.
And he wishes he was back there.
Yeah, probably. My roommate, one of my best friends, my lover, my many things.
Yeah, you should hear some of the noises that come from this apartment when I'm walking by in the morning.
Yeah. Gabriel Cooper, everybody. Woo!
Oh, hey guys! How you doing?
Hi, Gabe. How you doing?
Great. I'm happy to be here.
Are you?
I just spit all over. That's how excited I am.
So what are you doing there?
I'm illustrating on a pad of paper with a pen.
It's nice to know you're paying attention.
Yes. What?
Yeah, at least you're here physically.
Barely. He's barely here physically.
He's fading away into another dimension.
He's like Marty. Marty, you're fading away. That was a terrible Christopher Lloyd.
That was the worst.
I think that was the best Christopher Lloyd
you ever did.
That I've ever done.
God, Doc Brown, that's Shameful, really.
I think, as anyone who has listened to one of the more recent episodes of the Nobodies knows, I have apparently an affinity for Doc Brown impressions. Really bad Doc Brown impressions.
Horrible Doc Brown impressions.
As long as you're proud.
I am proud at all times of everything I do. So, let's get started, shall we?
We shall.
One of the parts of the format of this podcast is every day, or every, not every day, but every time we record this podcast, Steve has his own little section that he is going to introduce right now.
Mm-hmm. It is the random topic. I just go online, the interwebs, pick something out of the blue, and then we are forced to talk about it, whatever it may be, for 5-6 minutes. And hopefully it will be very awkward.
Awkward is the name of the game. So,
keyword.
Keyword. So we may or may not know anything about this topic. Steve is laughing. Does that mean you picked the topic?
All right. The topic is deleting spam mail from your email account.
Oh. Do you guys... I use Gmail.
Me too.
Me as well.
I only use Gmail, and I have several Gmail accounts.
Yeah, I have probably 8 or 9 email accounts that are all linked to my Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about Gmail, though, is it automatically filters your spam.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
But, so I don't ever delete my spam. It automatically deletes it after, like, what, 30 days?
30 right? days, yeah.
I never check.
I don't check. But I will say, there is, and I'll show this to you guys, and I'll do a dramatic reading. I do sometimes receive spam in my inbox that I don't bother trying to send to my spam folder, because I find it too incredibly amusing. This is an email that I'm going to just pass around to these guys and let them quickly look at it while I explain to you. I started receiving these emails from the same person, quote-unquote person, about a month and a half ago. And they are the most amusing, grammatically incorrect emails that I have ever received in my entire life. Warning, they are explicit. I think we are going to have an explicit sticker for this podcast. So,
is that even a word?
So here is a dramatic reading of an email. From Janine Evans to Ian Page. Ian, check this. Gangbang smoking hairy slut get hardcore fucked. Rats together. Perhaps for the last time. Would you mind making a few windows? Colorful scenes were depicted there of armies marching. We'll go on the way it was. Spido spoke with what was that of Admiral Stingo. Yeah.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Yeah. So what about you guys? Any interesting stories with spam?
I don't really get spam. I just get emails I don't want.
I've never actually tasted it, though.
Never had spam?
Spam.
It's big in funny. Hawaii.
We saw spam a lot yesterday.
Yes, we did.
That seems relevant.
They had the biggest prop can of spam I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was like a 3-foot tall can of spam. Mm-hmm.
It was during the Camelot.
During Camelot, yeah.
Oh, spam! Okay, I get it now.
Did you just pick up how we segued into that?
Jesus Christ.
Wonderful. This is going swimmingly.
I'm suddenly regretting doing this podcast with Steve. you're my new arch-nemesis.
Oh.
You're everyone's arch-nemesis.
This should be a fun podcast.
I think it's been about enough time. Did we finish the spam?
We got a couple more
spam.
Minutes.
Spam, okay. I don't delete emails. My Gmail folder is like at 8 gigs right now, and we get 10 gigs, I think. So I should probably delete stuff eventually.
Do you just like keeping an archive?
I'm always afraid that if I delete something, the next day I'm going to need it. And
even if it's something
Do you at least organize it? Like,
I organize a little bit.
But not all
Not at all.
I like...
No, it's just all chaos.
I keep folders. Like you can, in Gmail, you can organize, like, by by tags and folders and everything. I do that, and I don't delete it just about anything. But my anal retentive mind requires me to have an empty inbox.
You know that there is just a search bar for your emails.
Yeah, but I just like having an empty inbox.
That's weird. That's not the purpose of an inbox.
So it's like, essentially, you like having an empty life.
I love having it. Because, like, to me, anything that's in my inbox is are things that I need to accomplish still.
I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, so, in my box right now, I have an email from Senator Carl Levin.
Oh, I get emails from Barack Obama all the time.
Yeah.
The thing is, those aren't something that we can really accomplish.
Even Beyonce emailed me once. That was really great.
Yeah?
It was really nice of her.
Really personal?
Yeah, it was incredibly. It had my name, Gabriel Cooper,
at
the top.
Did she sign it?
And, yeah, her signature was at the bottom, which I don't understand that because it's digital, so it doesn't really matter. It's not like I can print it off and sell it on eBay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could.
I mean, I could, I guess.
You wouldn't make much money.
$2, maybe.
You would lose money on the transaction.
Oh, yeah, shipping and handling and such. Huh.
All right, so I think we have kind of exhausted that topic for this week.
Just a little bit.
So that's it. Eventually we'll have like intro and outro music for that, I think.
I hope so.
Because I feel like that's going to be a fun segment. Yeah,
that is in the tubes.
Yeah.
Music is coming out somewhere at some point.
As you may have heard, we had music at the beginning of this podcast, but it is the default music that comes with GarageBand, which, you know, isn't bad music by any means, but
it's got a little bit of funk to it.
Yeah, but it's not...
it's not ideal.
Not ideal. So we're going to have some custom music made, and it'll be a fun time for everyone.
Will it? A fun time for everyone.
Fun time.
Fun for the person who makes the music. Me.
Yeah.
But not anybody else.
Yep. So let's get started on to the real meat of the podcast, the awkward questions. But actually, before we get there, we're going to take a really quick break, just so we can all get settled, maybe take a drink, do whatever. You can go pee, if that's what you do, and we will be right back.
See you in a bit.
Hello, and welcome back to Awkward Men Asking Awkward Questions. All right, let's get into it. This is going to be the actual meat of the podcast, where we actually ask some awkward questions. So, Gabe Cooper, let's start off with an easy one.
All right.
Tell us in, like, 20 words or less what it is you do, like how you define yourself.
Wow. Well, I've been told before what I am has been described to me before as being a big bag of dicks.
I'll go with that.
But I like to place those said dicks as different talents.
You're a big bag of dick talents.
Dick talents, yes.
Dickish talents.
Dickish talents, long, you know, girthy talents. I'm a producer, director, writer, illustrator recently, and that's what I do with my life.
And designer.
And designer, graphic designer, yes. So I do all that when I'm not wallowing in self-pity.
And he does that.
Really well. That's his biggest...
Yeah,
that's
great.
His biggest dick.
I'm great at that.
His biggest, girthiest...
Cock.
Schlong.
Well, it's more like a chode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's just there. You can't turn away from it because it's just so interesting. But
you can't really do anything with it.
No, you can't. No.
Steve has a lot of experience with chodes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Every morning when I wake up.
That's the worst.
So, all right, so you're actor, writer, producer, director.
I wouldn't say actor, but we'll throw
that
in.
Okay, but you have acted.
I have acted once or twice.
It's one of your smaller schlongs.
Yeah, very small one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your pity schlong.
Yeah.
Your pity penis.
Pity penis.
Pity penis.
That's copyrighted.
Do you think you're any good at these things?
Do I think I'm any good?
Yeah.
Repeat the question. That's always a good way to start.
Do I think I Gabe Cooper, am any good at these things?
You're definitely good at repeating questions.
Yeah, no, that's another hobby of mine. I'd like repeating. I think, if I didn't think I was good, then I wouldn't be doing them continuously. I've tried and failed at a lot of things, but, you know.
What are some of the biggest things you've failed at?
Oh, God. Just love, first of all. All
right.
But that's not, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I haven't had, like, pushed down in the mud, crying my eyes out kind of failure, but I've had shows put up, and I've designed certain things and done performances that I look back on now and think I could have done better, so.
Well, see, how does that make you feel? Because, you know, what you say you're good at, that's what you're going to be doing, or that's what you plan on to do in your life, make a living. And that entails having this belief that other people are going to want to watch.
Yeah.
So is that, knowing that other people are going to be watching this, is that your biggest motivation, or is it putting something out there that you are proud of?
My work is, it's selfish. I do very selfish work. A lot of my work is oriented toward the things that I like and the stuff that I want to see that's not currently out there. And because there's an audience for the same things that you like.
Mm-hmm.
There'll always be an audience for something, but I think it's important to find what you want to see and put it out there, because then you know how you want it done and you'll get it done in a good way.
Do you think there's a level of narcissism you need to have?
Oh, yeah. Mm. I eat narcissism for breakfast.
I will say, as
Gabe's roommate, narcissism is part of the bag.
I mean, I'm drinking out of a chalice right now.
It's a lovely chalice, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
He owns several of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess I could ask that same question to you, too, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
As an actor, a comedian, and a writer, narcissism plays a big part.
Oh, yeah, you gotta be narcissistic. You have to, like, I think there's an awesome Mike Birbiglia quote, which I'm gonna totally butcher right now, which says something to the effect of, like, every day you go out there, you have to think that you totally rocked that set, otherwise you would kill yourself.
Yep.
You would leave what you're doing immediately if you weren't so completely delusional.
Delusional.
Yeah, you have to be delusional.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Even if you absolutely fail, you have to tell yourself, that was awesome! Because otherwise, well, why the hell are you going to keep doing it?
Yeah, everything I do, every time I'm writing a new script or anything, you know, I always have in the back of my mind, you know, I'm going to get Ryan Gosling to do this, and I'm going to be famous for it.
And I think that brings us to kind of a topic I'd like to talk about with you, Gabe. Okay. About, Gabe, you are a very driven person. You're driven everywhere. You're driven to the mall.
I'm driven to Burger King, Taco Bell occasionally. They don't have a drive-thru, so
you've made other people drive to get you things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I make a lot of people drive to get me things.
And you were never in the car.
No.
This joke is officially dead. I don't think it was actually ever alive. It was a stillborn joke.
It was, yeah, that was...
Okay, well, let's keep going.
But no, you are a very driven person, and what I mean by that is you go very far to get the best of your projects, to the point that you piss people off.
Oh, yeah.
You have made enemies and bugged people by doing some of these things, but I respect you for that because you go really far. Do you have any examples?
Well,
you can give?
I guess I can start by saying it's probably within the area I have more enemies than friends. My first theatrical piece that I wrote, well, co-wrote with a friend and co-directed kind of with my brother, but produced by myself. Was a show called Outstanding Eight. Many of you who are listening may know about it.
Or may have been in it.
Ian here was in it. It was a show about a very high concept show about the lives of superheroes, their intimate lives, following an event where they were unable to save the Empire State Building from being destroyed in an attack by a so-called supervillain. And I really wanted to make this thing happen, and I took it to certain people within the department, and I was rejected, and so I took it somewhere else, and in doing so went through channels that otherwise wouldn't have been available, but with the money on my side, I was able to kind of do some stuff, and I kind of pissed off a lot of people because a lot of people didn't think I was ready. I didn't think I had enough experience to tackle a project like this, but it ended up being fairly successful. We definitely didn't make our money back. We put a lot of money into it, but we didn't make... We made a decent amount. We sold out two nights, I would say, out of the three. And, you know, it was good, but, you know, I did make a lot of enemies of professors, of students.
Really, professors?
Yeah. I don't know how much I should go into detail.
Yeah, no, you don't have to name names, but... If you can answer this, did they just not, like, did they not feel the subject of the play was...
I received funding from the university to write this play. I don't remember what it was for, but they were doing a special exhibit on the comic book collection we have here at Michigan State University, because we have the largest... collection of comic books in one place in the United States here at MSU. And so it was planned that the show was going to open. It was going to kind of be in partnership with this exhibit. And so I got funding from the university, but then things kind of fell through. People didn't like the direction it was being taken. And so I kind of went above and beyond and did my own thing with it. And again, it came down to a lot of several professors did not believe that I was old enough or had enough experience to tackle something like this.
How old were you?
19.
So it was your sophomore year?
Sophomore year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. After you were done with this, did you have any animosity towards these professors?
I wouldn't go out of my way to be nice to them. Some of them I've made up with and we're close now. But what really made me feel like it was worthwhile was at the performance, one of my professors did come and see it, and he was really proud of it and thought it went really well. So that kind of made it worth it for me. And a lot of the actors who were in it got pretty good reviews from professors, not Ian.
No, even though I'm really proud,
Ian had a great performance.
I have issues with that show, which
we all do.
You know, I've made known before, maybe not on a podcast or anything, but this show I had issues with, more so direction things than anything. But like, that being said, I was still really proud of my performance, and I remember I went into my, what do you call it?
Jury?
I went into my jury, which is this thing at the end of each semester where all of the acting professors critique your semester, both in class and on stage, and I got really good reviews about a different show I was in, and then they were like, but you went outstanding eight. You know, it was your weakest work at MSU so far. And I was like, really? Really? I disagree. And,
I do as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, there's a performance of Outstanding 8 and actually accomplishing it, but producing it. Gabe, knowing you and how driven you are, you also have this uncanny ability to form high-profile relationships.
Yep.
You go out of your way to contact certain people that other people would never even consider.
About. Yeah. Like, what drives you to do that? Is it just that thing you were talking about earlier, like, Ryan Gosling will play this part?
Well, I think with anything, you have to, if you go out and tell yourself, well, no one's going to care about this, why would anyone want to, you know, if this person's out here making movies and being successful and making millions of dollars, why are they going to care about what I'm doing?
Right.
But that's so wrong. If you are contacting this person to get an autograph or to suck their dick, essentially, then yeah, you know, these people aren't...
That is what I do.
Yeah, this is what Ian does.
I contact people, dear Robin Williams, can I suck your dick? Love, Ian.
Sign this photo.
P.S. Sign this photo.
But you just have to... People want to see your work. And if you're passionate enough about what you're doing, people are going to be passionate about hearing from you what you're doing. I guess with Outstanding 8, we actually worked with a relatively high-profile comic book and graphic novelist, Nate Powell, who wrote and illustrated the Eisner Award-winning graphic novel Swallow Me Whole, and I got him to work on it because I loved his artwork, and I emailed him, and he said he'd do it, so I got that out of it. And then as the show progressed, there was discussion of adapting the characters from the play into an actual comic book series, and in thinking of that, I automatically, you know, leapt up and started thinking of publishing houses to contact other writers who may be able to look at my work and see and tell us where to go with this, how to get it done. And with that, I found a small publishing house called Raw Studios, which is run by actor Thomas Jane and Tim Bradstreet, a relatively famous comic book cover artist. And they have a small publishing house where they publish works that they write and illustrate and such. And I'm a big fan of Thomas Jane's. His work in the HBO series Hung is one of my favorite TV shows. And so I emailed...
And he was the Punisher.
And he was the Punisher, which is important to know, except that movie, John Travolta. So I emailed him. Mm-hmm. I emailed, and it wasn't even... The email on the website was just like a rant, like just... email us, and I assume that was a secretary or something.
How did you email him? Was the content?
Gmail. I used Gmail.
Did it go to your spam?
It did not go to my spam folder.
How do you treat the person you're emailing?
Thomas Jane? I started out by introducing myself and just saying what I'm about, what I'm doing, where I'm at.
Do you email them assuming that you are on their level? Do you bring them down to your level? Or do you go to their level?
It's an in-between. You have to place yourself at the beginning as a confident person who's accomplished things that you're proud of. You have to do that straight away. And then don't pander. Do not pander. You know, you can throw a compliment here or there. That's always good. But just be straightforward. I open up with a paragraph explaining who I am, and then I go right into what I want.
Okay. Last question pertaining to Outstanding 8. What happened to it? Like, you put on this show, and then you said that there were prospects for a series, a comic book series.
Well, I guess, you know, I eventually did get in touch with Thomas Jane, and I actually got me and my brother and my friend John Wieringa, who is a co-writer, got invited to the set of HBO's Hung being filmed in Detroit, and we got to spend the day with Thomas Jane, and we talked to him about the comic and what we want to do with it. And there were discussions, and after we left that day, he and I continued to talk. But eventually the co-writer, John, moved to Georgia, and it just got complicated and drawn out. We were going to eventually maybe put it up on stage again, and we're still thinking about it. The other producer and I have had talks about it, but it would need some drastic rewrites before we put anything
out. Here's my idea. A sequel.
A squeakle.
A squeakle. Outstanding 8, the squeakle.
Uh-huh.
Outstanding 9.
Is this like an Ocean's 12?
Yeah.
5?
Actually, if anyone who's still it was in that show remembers, I was planning on making a parody version of Outstanding 8.
Oh, yeah.
Called The Spectacular 7.
Uh-huh. That was going to be a winner.
Which included such superheroes as a guy who could smell color. Do you remember the other ones were?
Smell, color.
Oh, there was the guy who could tell. He could always tell you what time of day it was, but he could only. He could tell you, like, it's 6 o'clock, but he couldn't tell you if it was AM or PM.
AM or PM, yep.
Yeah, it was really dumb.
Well, gotta start somewhere.
So, Gabe. In making these connections with, like, Thomas Jane, and you've, you know, made other connections with other people, why do you feel people might, and I will admit myself at one point was one of these people, have given you such a short, have given you such a hard time about it. Like, you are doing something that clearly is taking initiative to contact these people. Why do people give you such a hard time for it, you think, in your opinion?
Is it jealousy?
Like,
is
I guess...
That you don't deserve it?
Well, no. I guess, to start out, I would say, with anything like that, you know, my brother in New York is constantly meeting well-to-do famous people, and there's an incredible amount of jealousy I have that he gets to do stuff like that. But since he's my brother, I'm obligated to love him.
Jacob's gonna love to hear that.
So yeah, you know, when people see me doing this stuff, I mean, imagine if I saw one of my friends or someone I was going to school with doing, you know, being in touch with a personality, a well-to-do actor, I would be jealous. I would. And it doesn't come down to me. Like, it's not that I look at them and like, oh, they're jealous and, you know, they should be. I don't do that. And I don't, you know, occasionally at parties, you know, I'll throw out the old Thomas Jane or other card or not to, you know, it's a conversation. It's interesting.
It's interesting, but there have been moments at parties where we've been drinking, we've all been having a good time, and then you'll go off by yourself, and then you'll come back and say, I just had a drunken conversation with Thomas Jane.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, occasionally I'll call him and just update him about stuff. But, you know, back to, I don't think people are wholly jealous. I don't think that's what it is. I think it is just, you know, they want to be doing something like that, too. Mm-hmm. They do. Just like I look at, you know, again, I look at my brother, I look at other people I know and see them doing stuff, and I'm like, I want to do that.
Do you think that there's any level of animosity in the sense of, like, I'll tell you what I thought when I used to think this was, that's not proper. He's not going through the quote-unquote proper channels.
He's going against the system.
He's going against the system.
Against the status quo, fighting the man.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think there's any of that? I mean, obviously there was, there was with me, but do you think there are other people who deal with that?
That you're doing it the wrong way?
I think there's an idea that, like, when it happens, it'll happen on its own.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't be going out to these people and asking them to see my work and introducing them to what I'm doing. I think there's kind of an assumption that if you're good enough, they'll notice you and they'll come to you. I don't believe that. There's too many people, there's too many things in the world for someone to possibly maybe notice you. But if you throw it in front of their face and let them see it right there, then they're gonna respond to that.
So you think the whole moving to L.A., someone catches you singing as a waitress in a diner, that's bullshit?
I mean, it's not bullshit. I guess if you're singing at a club or something and a music producer walks in and hears you and it's like, that's a pretty good one, kid.
And then, they're from the
1920s. Yeah, 1920s.
They have transported. Marty.
It was Marty.
Marty. Yeah, really good, kid.
There was no quote there. But no, I think that's, you know, that stuff probably does happen.
That's a romanticized version of what it is, or of what people think it is to be an actor, to be a writer,
exactly.
A producer.
But that's not what it is. Maybe that could very well have been possible in the days before the internet.
Hmm.
But now everything is there's so many channels that you do have to go through to talk to people
and
get people's attention.
Everybody's throwing shit out there.
Everyone's throwing shit out
constantly.
There. In LA, screenwriters will carry around copies of their scripts with them all the time in hopes of bumping into a producer. It's just not realistic.
All right. I think that's good on that kind of topic.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Gabe, let us talk about the title of this podcast is called Awkward Men, that being Steve and I.
Asking awkward questions.
And one of those awkward questions is your relationship to alcohol. So can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with
alcohol? All right, I'll talk about it just as long as you don't say the word alcoholic.
Okay. We will not say the A word.
No, you just put it in my head now. Now I'm
making
saying
you
it.
Say it.
Making me say it. Thank you, Louie. Alcohol. Alcohol.
You can just keep saying it.
Alcohol.
No, but like,
why do you drink so much?
let's put it on a front street. Why do you drink so much alcohol?
Do I drink so much for a college student?
That's a valid question.
Okay, well, I...
Explain that whole concept.
You drink enough for the two of us.
Your justification.
I do drink enough. You know, I'm young. I'll put that out there first. I'm young. Well, my body's not, but I am. My knees crack when I kneel down. Alcohol's a social lubricant. It is. And... I like.
Just don't use it as a real lubricant.
It burns, gentlemen.
Social lubricant, yes, but we're not always at social gatherings.
We're not. Some people may call it a weakness. Some people may call it alcoholism. But I sometimes, you know, I like a drink and then I like to write. I like
so it's a creative lubricant.
Yeah, it's for me. It frees my mind from the insecurities and the barriers that I put up when I'm sober. Because I, you know, there's things I can't say or do when I'm sober that, you know, alcohol makes a little bit easier for me to do when I'm a little bit tipsy.
I think we've all been there where we've been at parties or been mm-hmm. with other people where we've had a couple things to drink and then we would say something that we never would say in real life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you... I know we just gave you a hard time for this, but do you ever feel you get the... that people give you an unfair time normally? Like, or do you think that all of the ribbing that you get is probably justified?
I think it's justified. it is, because I do drink. I'm not gonna lie, I do drink. And
did we just start an AA session?
No. It's just some people just aren't drinkers. Some people have different tolerances.
Are you drunk right now?
Yes, I'm hammered. It's exposure to it, and, you know, I was always raised that if you, to an age, you know, if you want to drink it, you can, but know how to handle yourself and know what you're intaking, know your limits, know how to drink, essentially, how to handle it. And I have had some run-ins early in my college career where I did some stupid stuff and almost
tell us one of those stories.
You want the cop story?
Tell us the cop story. Okay. That's my favorite story.
All right. So I'm going to try to get through this pretty fast because it's a long story. But my sophomore year, it was when I was writing Outstanding 8, actually. I was over at a friend of mine's house, and I had been drinking underage at the time, and I had also been smoking weed, if that's what we call it here.
The marijuana.
And I was feeling dizzy and I feeling sick, so I left to go home, and I got about 3 blocks away from my friend's house, and I was just like, nope, I'm going to pass out on the way home. So I saw a cop car nearby. I went up and knocked on his window. So, because that was logical to me at the time. Public servants, you know, they're good people, hopefully. Knocked down his window. He rolled down his window and said, how can I help you? And I said, I can't make it home. Can I have a ride? And he just was like, get in. So I got in the car, and he's like, where do you live? And I told him where I lived, and he started driving in that direction. Then he didn't say anything for the first few minutes, and I was just sitting there. And considering the state I was in, I was kind of chill. And then he turned to me and said, how old are you? And I said, 21.
Which is the instant cue that you're obviously not 21.
Which is insecure. And so he asked again, how old are you? And I said, I'm 19. He's like, are you drunk? And I was like, oh, yeah. He's like, okay. And he kept driving a little bit more. He was like, anything else? I was like, I am blazed out of my mind. And he kind of smiled and then looked back at out the front window and kept driving. He eventually pulled up in front of where I live. And I went to get out. I said thank you, and I went to get out of the car. And he told me not to open the door. And so at that moment, the sweaty butt I had turned into no longer sweaty butt. But
mud butt?
Mud butt.
Mud butt. You went from sweaty butt To Mudbutt, okay.
And he turned. I turned to him and he said, "Kid, I was your age once, and I did stupider things than you did today. But I just want you to know, if you ever are in a situation like this again, always find the police and always just ask, because we're good people. And we want to make sure you're safe."
Or you just found the good one.
Yeah. And that's kind of what... And that's why I've never done anything like that again. I haven't gotten to that limit before where I haven't been able to walk home. Because I don't think next time I'm going to find the...
I mean, you have to admit, that was a pretty ballsy thing that you did.
Yeah.
Walking up and knocking on a cop car in a college
I wouldn't have ever done that.
Yeah.
I've gotten drunk and tuffed at home before, and it's like, it sometimes is like the worst experience.
It's like fighting a war.
There wouldn't have been no toughing at home for me that night. Okay. There would have been toughing it on the pavement with my face.
Toughing it on the pavement.
All right. Well, let's talk about things that drive you to drink.
Oh, God.
Now, there are creative reasons why you probably drink. You know, the creative lubricant, the social lubricant.
Can we stop saying lubricant? I'm sorry I brought that word up.
I love the word lubricant.
It's just, it brings to mind the word moist, and I hate that word.
Okay. Well, there's often another reason that drives you to drink that you like to talk about, or...
Do I?
Yeah. Or we listen to you about.
Yeah, you listen to me.
We listen to you bitch about. Yeah, maybe it's okay. More...
Your love life.
Oh.
Your relationships.
Hacha.
With people.
Shiza.
Yeah, let's talk about this for a little bit.
I mean, this isn't just a motivation for your drinking. It's also a motivation for some of your works.
All of my works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I fell in love with a superhero once. That led to an interesting scenario. Wrote a play about it.
Yeah.
Called The Outstanding Eight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You should check it out.
But if any of you guys out there are familiar with one of his most recent works called You Can't Write This Shit, that was inspired by a foray with some...
A foray?
Foray.
I think he said a four-way. Gabe was in a four-way?
Yeah. Yes.
Him and three other dicks from his bag.
Wow.
That's funny.
Dick bag. Shouldn't have brought that up.
Well, you don't have to name names, but like, what is the scenario that drove you to write that movie?
Oh, God, it's horrible that you're asking this now, because I've actually finally pretty much gotten over the woman who actually, the bulk of my work is based on. I hate saying that, but it's true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't have to, like, say names or do anything.
No, I'm not going to say names. You know, it was my first experience with what I think might be love, I guess. It's honest. You know, it was just a kind of moment in life meeting this woman and having the experience that I did that I look back on it now and it doesn't seem like it should have happened. We were two incredibly different people that made no sense in the world, but for some reason, for a few weeks, we did. Or for one night, if you want to put it that way. And so it's always kind of the basis of my work is, what if I had stayed, essentially? Which I think not only applies to that situation, that scenario with this woman, but with everything in life, and I think that's why having that experience inspires a lot of my works, because the thought of if you could go back and go left instead of right at one point in your life, what would that point be, and why, what would it change? Had I not had my experience with that girl one night, or a week or so, whatever it was, my life would be incredibly different now. I wouldn't be living with Ian, probably. I may not know Steve. I wouldn't have done any of the creative things I've done.
I don't actually exist. I'm just a figment.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah.
Of his imagination.
So, yeah, I mean, it's... I draw a lot from my experiences.
It's a very interesting moment in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you think... Do you think that... This is a question I've heard a lot. Do you think it's possible for creative types to maintain relationships?
Ooh. Well, I mean, it is, but you have to find someone.
Oh, let me rephrase this. Do you think you need to find another creative type, or do you need...
No, God, no.
Or, okay, so do you think maybe you need to find the opposite of that? Maybe an uncreative type?
Yeah, or? And that's why I kind of think, you know, she kind of, this woman captured my heart in so many little words.
Are you going to write a country
song? Yeah, I'm going to write a country song about
it. Is that your next foray?
Yeah, it's my next foray. No, I think it's, oh, I'll put that one away. Okay, that's gone.
Put that accent away, I beg you. That's almost as bad as the...
I mean, I guess I don't want to say that creative people can't fall in love and be in a relationship, because I know a lot of really creative people who are in amazing relationships together, so I guess that's kind of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I guess being a writer, it's... If you're a writer who bases... Who draws from his own life...
Yeah.
That can be difficult... And it is difficult because suddenly you have to find a line between what's going to hurt someone and what's going to be acceptable to this someone. Mm-hmm. And how, and that's even not even just in a romantic relationship, but even with friend relationships.
Right. Do you feel as a creative type, as a writer, you create archetypes, you create ideals?
Oh, yeah.
For people?
God, yes. Yeah, you have to. And they automatically become that on their own. It's not something that you kind of set out to write or do. It just...
No, I mean real people.
Real people?
Yeah, like...
Oh, do I look at someone and place them as a character?
Yeah.
Like, do you say, oh, she is...
She is my perfect romantic ideal.
And then he is, like, he's going to be the great best friend guy, or he's going to be my nemesis, or he's going to be...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, most definitely. Yeah, recently... I had a little, I don't know what to call it. It's not a fling. It wasn't a fling. It was a fleeting infatuation, I guess. But, you know, it shocked me, and I kind of had an epiphany given this situation where I kind of realized I met this girl, and we were really hitting it off well. We really got along, had great conversations, but suddenly in the back of my head I was like, you know, I'm writing the sequel to You Can't Write This Shit, and this girl would make a great love interest.
Oh.
She would be absolutely fantastic. And it even got to the point where I gave her pages of the script that I had read and told her that I kind of wanted to base this character off her. And, well, she kind of brought it up first because she kind of realized that the character was her, but it was weird because I wrote the character before I met her, but she fit into that role, and maybe that's why I was drawn to her, because I was essentially falling in love with my character.
Ruby Sparks!
Ruby Sparks! Yes!
Well, is there a trouble for you to distinguish your creative self from your, what some may call like a sincere self? I'm not implying that you're not sincere.
I'm not.
But like real world relationships...
Yeah, involving this recent predicament, I got into an argument with one of my really close friends. It was resolved, and we're fine now, but she kind of came out and told me, you know, Gabe, you live in a romanticized world of high expectations and, you know, no limitations to what you think can happen with someone right when you see them. You create a world... With every person you meet right away, you find something that you could see, you know, in the future with every person you meet, and that's why, you know, you're so miserable. And I was like, wow, that really fucking hurt. That's really...
Do you agree with it?
I do. And, yeah, no, she was great. It was great. But, yeah, I have a problem with romanticizing my life.
Okay.
And it's not because I have a bad life and I want it to be better. I have great friends and great family, but I don't know. I have high expectations, great expectations.
It's a point of conflict and consideration.
Yeah.
So, do we have time for another topic? One more?
Yeah, we got a little more time. I think we can close the chapter on the love stuff for now. Mm-hmm. We've really gotten into his psyche here.
You did well. You did well, Gabe.
Oh, God, yeah. Thank you.
I have a topic I'd like to go into. You're a religious person, Gabe.
Yeah.
Do you have faith? Do you have some other explanation for faith? I guess what I want to ask you is, what does your spirituality mean to you?
Oh, God.
What is it?
I just answered.
Oh, God.
God. Essentially God. You know, my spirituality is based in Christianity. There's a lot of things I disagree with about the actual church itself, but, you know, I kind of just, I don't know how to say this. You know, I pray every day. I pray to, God every day. And it helps. It does. It's like having a therapist you can always kind of talk to, and you know you're not talking to yourself. You can kind of push it off as something else. But I do believe, you know, something's up there, something created us, something's watching us in whatever capacity that may be. I have no idea. But, you know, I just think life's too wonderful and there's so many great things, and we're smart and we're sitting here with a microphone that's recording our voices on a piece of metal with glass in it. Like,
so
something gave us a brain and an idea to be able to do these things.
You're not implying that, like, God is the reason why we have all those things.
No, I'm saying we're brilliant creatures.
Okay.
And it's hard for me to imagine that without the influence of this thing, we just kind of waddled up on land and suddenly, over the course of bajillions of years.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't disagree with people who disagree with that. I have no problem with other people's beliefs. It's something that comforts me that I have and I can call my own.
Do you ever think it's anything more than just comfort? You know, I use the example, any of you who saw Rob Rosnowski's Happy Holy Gaze.
I assistant directed it.
I know you did.
Yeah.
Because I was the assistant playwright on that play.
I did not see this, real quick.
It's a play about a woman over the course of her life kind of struggling with religion and what it means to her.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in the play, there's a scene called Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
Where she has cancer and she is really struggling with her life and she doesn't know what to do and all these sorts of things. And she goes to her family, who's very religious, and they explain to her that, you know, it's a comforting place, having religion.
Yeah.
Do you think it's anything more than that to you? I mean, do you, like you mentioned, it's comfort for you. Like, is it...
It's comfort, and for me, it's something to look forward to.
Okay. Not necessarily.
Well, not even reaching that far. I just think, you know, there's an idea of hope that comes with religion that I really, really dig, because it's, you know, it's every day there's a possibility that something amazing could happen and that maybe this God that exists is going to help you get that. And or maybe he's not. Or maybe he doesn't do that.
Do you trust other people as much as you trust God?
Yeah, I trust my brother. Trust my mom. Trust my grandma. But, you know, those are the things besides God that have been in my life the longest. So
okay. Well,
and I don't know what to say about trust. I mean, when my grandpa died, you know, who meant the world to me, I wasn't like, damn you, God, you're the worst. How could you allow this to happen?
Yeah. Well, it's like when good things happen to you, through some orchestration?
I don't think it's an orchestration. Like, he's like, oh, little puppets, dance. Dance on your stage. I don't think that's it. I think, you know,
What was that voice?
I don't know. Maybe, I think.
It's better than your country voice.
Yeah.
It's better than your country voice.
I don't know. I don't thank him for it happening, for making it happen. That's not what I'm thinking. I'm thanking him for me being alive so that I can experience that thing.
Okay. So, what do you hate about, or not hate, that's a strong word.
Yeah, but like you said, what do you dislike? Yeah, you said you have issues with the church.
Well, I think. Or other people's. I think religion should. It's difficult for me to accept religion when it's organized and there's like, you know, meetings and in buildings and there's windows and there's libraries. Like, that's just weird because I don't think you need that. Like, it's a personal thing. It's a personal relationship, and I don't want a priest standing up. And that's interesting, too, because I was almost, prior to coming to MSU, I was going to actually go into the seminary and become a Lutheran priest. But I decided against it because of the organized church. But I just don't... I was always so put off by a dude in robes standing in front of me telling me I'm going to go to hell if I don't listen to every word in the Bible or such as that.
Do you have a belief in hell, a concept of hell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You ever seen the movie Constantine? Yeah.
Is that everything defined by comic books?
That is the first time. No, it's not. We talked about The Punisher, and then there's... Shit. Okay, I thought that was the first comic book reference.
I will say we have talked very little about comic books on this podcast. Maybe your second time you come on.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about that. No, I, you know, God, religion.
Yeah,
it's
well. Okay, I think let's end the show. We're getting towards the end of the show here. Let's end it on one last topic, which might also be the most awkward topic in the room.
Oh, Christ,
I can't recall this topic.
Let's talk a little bit about, Gabe and I live together.
Yes, we do.
And, Gabe, tell us a little bit about that experience. And the ups and the downs and the hardships and the... All the things with that.
I'd like to hear about this, because I'm just on the outskirts, often.
God, I don't know what to say. It's just such an abysmal wasteland in this apartment. Every day I come home and it's like walking into Jabba's palace. Like, it's just, I can hear the pit and the beast and the music's playing and the salacious crumb is sitting on. Yeah, it's rough. And then I go to the fridge and there's nothing. And then I try to eat the food and I'm not allowed to. And,
okay, that was just today.
And I try to use the bathroom, and it's just clogged and just disgusting, and it's, like, piled up. And it's horrible. I have a sanctuary beneath my bed where I live and sleep and eat. So.
But really, like, I'm not looking for compliments or anything, but I'm like...
No, he's looking for reasons to be mad at you.
Ian puked on the shower curtain once. That was cool.
You're never going to let that go.
You got yourself
into
this.
He had just eaten pizza. So it wasn't like regular people puke. It was like just pizza sauce puke. Like, wrecked our shower curtain. White shower curtain.
Did you get a new one?
I love that shower curtain. No, we just watered it down and hoped that it doesn't.
And we tucked the shower curtain.
We tucked the shower curtain into the bathtub. Tub.
So you can't see it.
What else?
Well, what's an upside to living with me? Besides my TV, because that's what you told me once.
Yeah.
You said the only reason you were living with me is because I have a big TV.
Well, that's true.
An upside to living with you is that my apartment is right across the hall that he can always go to.
Yeah, I would say that's the biggest upside. Biggest upside is if for some reason anyone were ever to come in here and steal our sofas, I can always use Ian as a good little seat.
I hate you. okay. Oh, what about what's the biggest downside to living with me?
If anyone were to steal our sofas, I'd have to use Ian as a seat. All right.
And on that note, let's go to plugs.
Butt plugs.
Butt plugs. Not butt plugs. These are not butt plugs. We're not plugging butt plugs.
We're going to have a show one time with a bunch of sound effects. That show, we will have butt plugs.
Yeah, oh, yeah, God. Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah. I think plugging butt plugs, like... Gabe, can you be our Foley guy?
Yes, that's my purpose.
All right, so I'll go first. February 10th, if you're in the sensing area, I am in the theater department's Valentine's Day Cabaret. It has a suggested donation of $5, and it's over at the Kellogg Center. You can come listen to me sing and do a poem, and it'll be really, really cool. Also, February 20th, I'm in another fundraiser where I'm doing 5 minutes of comedy along with another 9 comedians at Connections Comedy Club in Lansing. and that'll be really cool, and that's $15, 10 of which goes to the theater department, or specifically to SPAM, which is the
Spam-a-lot?
Yeah, not Spam-a-lot.
SPAM's been brought up a lot.
In I know. SPAM, which is the organization, the student organization within the theater department. And what else do I have to plug? If you are an actor on February 24th or 5th, whatever that Monday is, we are holding auditions for Gruesome Playground Injuries and the Student Playwriting Series over in the auditorium building on the in the third floor acting studio. If you have any more questions about that sort of thing, find me on Facebook or elsewhere. Speaking of Facebook, we will have a Facebook group, or not a group, and a page for this podcast going up soon with links to everything, maybe funny links that we find or interesting things, and you guys can talk about the podcast, do whatever you want. But that'll be going up soon. And that's it for plugs from me. What about you, Steve?
I'm looking up dates right now. I don't have any personal plugs. However, I am in one of the music ensembles here at Michigan State, the concert band. Michigan State has a very high-quality music program. And the ensembles, they're like a concert band, symphony band, wind symphony, and the MSU orchestra here, they're top notch. If you go to those concerts, you will be hearing wonderful ear orgasmic music. Eargasmic music. That's what I was looking for. So they often perform at the Wharton Center in the Great Hall. I forgot the name of the hall.
The Cobb Hall.
Cobb Hall, yeah. And then if you just go to thewhartoncenter.com and look up events, you'll see a list of when they perform. Go and see them. Go support the Michigan Music School.
And what about you, Gabe? What do you have to plug?
Starting tonight, I will be recording the first episode of an all-new podcast titled Gabe Cooper's Sex Tape.
Yep. We've been looking forward to this. It'll be a twice-weekly podcast, hopefully. Yeah, it's going to be pretty fun.
It's going to be, from what I hear, very intimate.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be pretty great.
Hey, guys, I got to go. My mom's calling.
Is that real? Yep, your mom's calling. Okay. So that's it for the very first episode of Awkward Men Asking Awkward Questions. I think it was a pretty big success.
I think we got sufficiently awkward.
Yeah.
At least for Gabe.
For Gabe, yeah. If you have any questions or comments, find us on Facebook and let us know. We will be back next week.
Mm-hmm. Suggest people you want us to interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything like
just
that.
Just if you want to leave a comment, a topic for the day.
Yeah. So until next time, I am Ian Page.
And I am Stephen Lieb, and my burrito is thoroughly digested.
That is disgusting.
Have a good life.